This is the time and place for the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission meeting. Today is Tuesday, March 8th, 2005. It is 10:30 a.m. We're at the State Capitol Building in Pier, room 412. First item on the agenda today is the approval of the minutes. First of all, I will check to see who is on the line with us this morning. Larry Hettinger, are you here? Larry Hettinger? Colleen Savold?
Yes, I'm here, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Colleen. Laurel Burke? Laurel Burke?
I'm here.
Thank you. Wayne Culp?
Yes, sir. I'm here.
Mary Thornton?
I'm here.
Bill Heaston? Bill? Tal Wysorek?
I'm here, Mr. Chair.
Ave Wiseman?
I'm on the line, sir.
Is that how you pronounce your name?
Yeah, that's close enough.
Thank you. Mary Lonis? Denny Law?
Here, Mr. Chairman.
Rick Johnson?
Here, Mr. Chairman.
Jim Talcott?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. And has anyone joined us since I started asking? Is there anyone else with us besides those whose name I called? If not, thank you for joining us. First item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
Mr. Chairman, so moved.
Second.
Motion, I will concur. The motion carries. Consumer issues, status report. Jim Melhoff is not with us. Is there someone else? Sarah.
I will be handling that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The commission has received a total of 297 consumer contacts during 2005. 101 of these contacts have been received since the last report was prepared for the February 8, 2005 commission meeting. 32 of the contacts for this period involve telecommunication services. 13 of the contacts involve electrical services. 11 contacts involve natural gas services. 6 contacts involve gas and electric services. 11 contacts involve cellular phone services. 16 contacts were related to the Do Not Call registry, and 12 contacts involved miscellaneous items not regulated by the PUC. 239 of the 297 complaints received in 2005 have been resolved, and 2,065 of the 2,370 contacts received in 2004 have been resolved. Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah. Item number 2 is CT05-001 in the matter of the complaint filed by WWC License LLC against Golden West Telecommunications Co-op, Vivian Telephone Company, Sioux Valley et al. On February, I will skip reading the paragraph. Today, shall the commission grant intervention to any parties that may have filed? This is being handled by
No one filed any interventions.
All right. Then we will pass by that since there's no filings. First item under electricity is BL04-041 in the matter of the application of Basin Electric Power Cooperative for an energy conversion facility permit for the construction of a combustion turbine generator near Groton, South Dakota. Today, shall the commission grant Northern Natural Gas Company's application for party status?
I will be handing that docket on behalf of staff. I would just like to point out to the commission that Northern Natural Gas has filed a petition for party status in this docket. Their filing was one day late, but staff at this point does not oppose granting them party status at this point because they are an interested party in this docket.
Thank you, sir. Is there anyone on the line or before the commission at this time who wishes to present any information on this item to the commission? If not, is there a motion by the commission?
I move that we grant Northern Natural Gas's application for party status.
Second.
And I will concur. Motion passes. Item number 2, EL05-003, in the matter of the joint request for an electric service territory boundary change between the City of Washington Springs and Central Electric Cooperative. The question before the commission today is, shall the commission approve the territory boundary changes? Staff on this is?
That would be me, Chairman.
Michelle?
Thank you, Chairman Hansen. Excuse me. The City of Westington Springs and Central Electric filed a joint request for approval of an electric service territory boundary change agreement. The agreement exchanges service territory between the two parties. The city is surrendering a portion of the land in the city limits, which is south of Highway 34, and also a portion of Section 7 in Township 107 North, Range 64 West, located in Girald County. The co-op, in turn, is surrendering several lots located in Section 18 of Township 107 North, Range 64 West in Girald County. And the description is listed in the agreement. Both parties agree that this territory exchange is in the public interest and will provide adequate electric service to all areas and customers affected and will promote the economical and efficient use and development of the electric systems for both the city and the co-op. Currently, there are no customers affected, and there are no facilities located in those areas. Staff would agree that the territory boundary change is in the public interest and would recommend the commission approve this territory boundary change request.
Thank you, Michelle. Is there anyone before the commission who would like presenting any information at this time? Any of the parties wish to present anything to the commission? If not, is there a motion? I will move.
A question, Mr. Chairman. And I think you said it, but there are no customers affected, no one, or there are no structures within these territories?
That's correct. The land is owned by somebody, but they have nothing on it.
If that's the case, Mr. Chairman, I would make the motion to approve the territorial change.
And I second.
I concur. Motion carries. Next item is under telecommunications. Before we get on to telecommunications, I'd just like to point out that today, for the first time, the Public Utilities Commission has a live audio of the commission meetings. They are available through links located at the PUC website on www.puc.sd.gov, and we are casting on the web today so that anyone with a computer can access and listen into our meetings. And I'd like to say thank you. The commission appreciates all the work that went into this from our folks and from the rest of the folks in state government. Telecommunications TC04-257, in the matter of the filing by Quest Corporation for its notice of modifications to Exhibit B and motion to modify the Quest Performance Assurance Plan found in Exhibit K to the Statement of Generally Available Terms and Conditions. The question before the Commission today is, shall the Commission approve the amendments to the QPAP? Parties presenting this today, is there anyone wishing to make a presentation to the Commission at this time? Harlan.
Unless you want Quest to make a statement first.
That's what I was debating, whether or not they should make a comment first.
Mr. Chairman, this is Colleen Siebold from Quest. We would just ask the commission to approve the filing. Laurel Burke is on the line, and if there are any questions, she would be happy to answer them.
Thank you, Colleen. Harlan?
Staff would recommend approval of the amendments made to the QPAP. The Exhibit B to the statement of the SCAT has gone into effect without commission action after 60 days.
Thank you, Harlan. Are there any questions by members of the commission? If not, I will make the motion that the commission approve the amendments to the QPAP.
Second.
Thank you,
motion carries. TC04-259, in the matter of the filing by Goldline Telemanagement Incorporated for an amended certificate of authority to provide inter-exchange telecommunication services in South Dakota. The question before the commission is, shall the commission amend the certificate of authority for Goldline Telemanagement Incorporated? Is Goldline represented?
Mr. Chairman, Goldline is on the line. My name is Avi Wiseman.
Avi, is there anything you'd like to present to the commission at this time?
I guess I've spoken with staff analyst Mr. Keith Singer on several occasions, and we have finally received the bond in order to amend the certificate of authority for prepaid telecommunications activities. Goldline is the largest prepaid telecom provider in Canada, and has licenses in each state to provide prepaid services except for South Dakota at this point. And we hope that the bond, meets all the requirements.
Thank you. Keith?
Thank you, sir.
On December 23rd of 2003, the Commission approved a certificate of authority for Gold Line Telemanagement Incorporated. That authority was subject to the restrictions from accepting any customer deposits or advance payments and from offering any prepaid services. On December 7th of 2004, Gold Line requested that these restrictions be removed and they be allowed to offer those prepaid services. On February 23rd, 2005, the Commission received the $25,000 bond as requested by staff. I would recommend that the Commission amend the Gold Line Telemanagement Incorporated COA by replacing the restrictions with a $25,000 continuing bond requirement. Thank you, Keith. Anyone else wishing to come before the Commission on this item at this time? If not, Commission action.
Mr. Chairman, I move to amend the Certificate of Authority.
And I will second.
And I concur. The motion carries.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. TC04-263, in the matter of the filing for approval of a transfer of a certificate of authority from SBC Long Distance Incorporated to SBC Long Distance LLC. Michelle, are you presenting this?
Yes, thank you, Chairman Hansen. On December 7th, 2004, SBC Long Distance, Inc., formerly known as Southwestern Bell Communications Services, Incorporated, doing business as SBC Long Distance, filed notification with the Commission of an internal reorganization to a limited liability company to be known as SBC Long Distance LLC. Subsequently, on February 15, 2005, the Commission was notified the company will be known as SBC Long Distance LLC, doing business as SBC Long Distance. A local COA was issued to the former company on June 11, 2004, and an inter-exchange COA was issued to the former company on June 30, 2004. The new company has relied upon the existing information filed in the previous two applications. The applicant intends to offer its services in the territory now served by Quest Corporation. The former company has a $25,000 surety bond with the Commission. Once the legal name change has occurred, they will be reissuing a bond to reflect the new name change. Staff would recommend the Commission approve the request for a certificate of authority for local exchange service and inter-exchange telecommunication services for SBC Long Distance LLC, doing business as SBC Long Distance, with the requirement they have a $25,000 surety bond and comply with the rural safeguards.
Thank you, Michelle. Does SBC have anything they need to present at this time?
I don't believe there's anyone on the line.
All right. Thank you. Any questions by members of the Commission? Is there a motion? I will move that the Commission approve the Certificate of Authority transfer from SBC Long Distance, Inc. to SBC Long Distance, LLC.
And I will second.
I concur.
Motion carries. Item number four is TC05-006 in the matter of the request by Quest Corporation for a waiver of a requirement to file a switched access cost study. The question before the Commission today is, shall the Commission grant the waiver from filing a switched access cost study? Harlan?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a similar type of request that Quest has made in docket TC02085 and TC99-073, in that they, in those two dockets, the company actually filed a cost study but did not request that the rates go into effect. In this proceeding, what the company has done is they've done a brief synopsis of what the impact would be as required by the administrative rule, but they did not file the complete cost study. And staff has reviewed what they filed, requested additional information, and would recommend that the Commission grant the waiver request as requested by Quest to not, it would grant the waiver since they are not proposing to implement the increase that would be tied with the cost study.
Thank you very much, Harlan. Are there any questions by members of the commission? Is there a motion by the commission?
I would move that the commission grant the waiver from filing a switch to access cost study.
Second.
I will concur. Motion carries. Item 5 is TC05-016 in the matter of the filing by Prairie Wave Telecommunications for designation as an eligible telecommunications carrier. The question before the commission is, shall a commission grant South Dakota Telecommunications Association and Fort Randall Telephone Company's petitions to intervene? Harlan, are you carrying this one?
I guess what a shortcut method would be maybe if Bill Houston is on the line to ask if he has any objection to the two parties being granted intervention.
Thank you very much, Harlan. Bill, are you on the line?
I am on the line, Mr. Chairman, and I have no objection.
Thank you. Is there a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I will go ahead. I will move to grant the petition to intervene.
And I will second.
I concur. The motion carries. Item 6, TC05-020, in the matter of the filing by McLeod USA Telecommunications Service for approval of revisions to its switch to access tariff. Question before the commission is, shall the commission approve the switch to access tariff revisions? Harlan?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What McLeod USA has done is made some clarifying text changes to their switched access cost study, or switched access tariffs, excuse me. Staff would recommend approval.
Thank you. Motion by the commission.
Commissioner Hansen, this is Greg Rislove, commission advisor. I do have a question with regard to Section 2 original page 17, which would be the last page of the filing that I received. Specifically, 2.6.2, subsection G, where there's mention of the ability of the customers to dispute a billing, both in time in terms of having paid the bill. And I don't have a specific question. It just struck me that this may be somewhat unique in what I've seen before in filings of this type, and I don't know if it complies fully with the rules and the statutes. I don't have any specific sites, but I at least wanted to raise the question, perhaps have somebody address it.
It looks like that someone is Rich Hoyt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, commissioners, and staff. SDTA is not an intervening party, and that language that was referenced was just brought to our attention. And I guess, you know, in looking at that language, and I guess more than anything, I would be speaking on behalf of our member companies as providers of long-distance services through Express that would be liable for some access. It seems to me that that language is unique. I'm not aware that I've seen it anywhere else. I hope that it's not in the LECA tariff. I guess we would have some concern just because it seems to be inconsistent with the statute of limitations on access charge collection, which I think is generally 2 years. And under that language, it would seem that it cuts you off if you don't initiate a dispute within the 90-day period that they reference. So I have those comments. If the commission would take those under consideration, we'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Rich. Any further questions of Mr. Quaid or comments?
I have a question for Greg Rislove, Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Certainly.
Greg, do you have a suggested way to address some of your concerns, which I think the commissioners share as well? Do you have any suggested action here? I mean, right now we're looking at whether or not to grant intervention at this point in time, correct? Or where are we at here? Do you have any recommendations then?
Commissioner Saar, what was on my mind that if there's guidance within the statutes or the rules that those should be considered, it just struck me that this may be a bit more binding than what we've seen in the past. And, again, it struck me as odd. And I think it's been a general rule of the commission to do what the statutes and the rules allow. This would appear to be somewhat a truncated form of what's normally allowed. Perhaps, again, worrying about the people who have to pay the bill, mistakes that could have been made. But once again, as Mr. Coy pointed out, he hoped it wasn't an ELECA tariff. I guess I would, you know, at least maybe pose a question to Mr. Best as to where staff is on this issue. I haven't heard from them yet.
Staff did visit with McLeod regarding this paragraph revision. One thing to remember when they say customer here is not the end user. It is the underlying carrier that is using the switched access. The reason that McLeod is putting this in is they've had court filings that they've had to argue where the paying company has chosen to they would pay the bill, and then at some later point in time, be it 2 or 3 years later, they would come back and argue that something did not take place that should have taken place. And what they're trying to do here is prevent the underlying or the fellow carrier from arguing something they should have argued 3 years ago, from arguing it now and trying to make it retroactive.
And if I may, Mr. Chairman, is it 90 days, is that, or what is the time limitation on this?
That's what that statement was there already. The first sentence was there.
Okay.
What they're adding is, if the company doesn't argue it now, they shouldn't be allowed to argue it 2 years later and make it apply all the way back to when the billing took place.
Are you comfortable that that does not violate any law, rule, et cetera?
Karen and I had discussion with Bill Haas with McLeod, and Karen seemed satisfied with his statements that he was making regarding the application of the law.
When do we need to take action on this docket? Do we have a deadline?
I'm not aware of any statutory requirement as far as when the commission has to act.
Question, Mr. Chairman?
Sorry, are you done?
For now, yes. Thanks.
My apologies. Yes. How often is the billing done between McLeod and the underlying telecommunications carrier?
Monthly.
So in many ways, this 90 days timeline is really something more like a 30-day timeline. I mean, I assume that...
Well, it would take some... It takes some time from when the call takes place to when all the billings go out. But it would be what McLeod was trying to do here, from what I recall of the conversation, is they were just trying to prevent a carrier from coming up with new arguments and going back a number of years and applying those arguments to a billing.
But that first sentence under G was already in the existing.
Yes.
Sure. Okay. So if the customers only have 90 days to initiate a dispute, how could they do so 2 years after the fact?
I'm not sure how that would apply either, but they've had, McLeod evidently has had a number of court proceedings where the carrier has gone back a number of years and tried to make, argue that something should have taken place.
Mr. Chairman, is someone from McLeod on the line?
Is there anyone on the line representing McLeod at this time?
No, there's not.
Just in case they had joined us. No, there's not. Can we Commissioner Johnson, do you have a
I have more of a comment. I didn't know if there were any questions, so I didn't want to comment if there were other questions.
It appears that we're at a point where it would be best to defer this to find out the additional information, but I think what the questions earlier were trying to find out whether or not there was any reason why it cannot be deferred. Does anyone know of any reason why this cannot be deferred or should not be? Is there a motion to defer this?
Is that motion needed, or?
I think so. I'd like to dispose of items that are on the agenda one way or another, at least to have record of what we did.
Then I will move that we defer this item, and particularly I think we need to have the parties and or the party and staff take another look at these provisions.
And I would be happy to second, and probably in an inappropriate manner, just make a comment. I mean, I'm really curious how that the addition of that second sentence. I'm interested in hearing from Claude how that may change current practice. I'm not clear that it would.
Thank you, and I will concur. Motion to defer carries. Item number 7, in the matter of approving the following agreements in TC-05-002, 004, 007, 012, and TC-05-015. The question before the commission at this meeting is, shall the commission approve the agreements? Sarah, I believe you are representing.
Thank you, Commissioner Hansen. I am. All of these agreements that you have mentioned have been properly filed and executed. They contain no discriminatory language, and no comments opposing the agreements were filed, and therefore staff would recommend approval of the agreements.
Thank you, Sarah. Are there any questions by commission? Any further comments needed? If not, is there a motion to approve the agreements?
So moved.
Second.
I will concur. The agreements are all approved. Item number 8, in the matter of approving the amendments to the agreements of TC-05-003, 009, 010, 011, 011-3, and TC-05-014. The question before the commission at this time is, shall the commission approve the amendments to the agreements? And representing all of these items before the commission, Sarah.
Thank you, Chairman Hansen. Again, these amendments have all been properly filed and executed. They also contain no discriminatory language, and no comments opposing them have been filed within the 20-day time period. Therefore, I would recommend approval of the agreements.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Is there a motion?
Chair, I move that the commission approve the amendments to the agreements.
And I will second.
And I concur. Motion carries. On item TC-05-047, in the matter of the proceeds from bonds and other security for the benefit of customers of S&S Communications, we have a number of questions before us today. The first is, shall a commission establish a procedure for providing notice to all potential claimants who have not yet filed of their rights and responsibilities in regard to filing claims against the proceeds? Number 2, shall a commission establish a cutoff date by which all potential claimants to the proceeds shall have filed their claims or be foreclosed from filing? Number 3, shall the commission determine that formal docketed complaints filed with the commission by customers against S&S also constitute claims against the proceeds? And number 4, shall the commission order any other preliminary relief at this time? Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. After staff had a discussion last week, or over the last few weeks about how to proceed on this, I think we decided the best way to do it was to open a docket specifically designed to deal with the issue of distribution of bond proceeds. We have no template for the procedure that we should follow, and therefore I think what we're here today to do is just to have the commission give us some direction in the form of orders that will tell us as staff how to handle this case. And to start with, I think we just want, these are very preliminary things. The reason why we've asked for a couple of the things like cutoff date and complaints, whether to treat complaints as claims against bond, is honestly it's so we know how to craft the notice language if the commission deems that we should give additional notice. I did up a sheet largely for my own reference here, but also for the benefit of the commission in order to go through several items that we talked about in terms of procedural suggestions. I don't think we're married to any of those. You know, the commission may have different ideas. You know, we can go through those one by one, or I've handed that out to all of you. We haven't served anyone yet, and I know that's a little odd in that there are potential interested parties out there, but this is kind of one of those chicken or egg things where we sort of have to do something, and then we're going to have to, in accordance with what you decide to do, we'll serve everyone, and I guess they have objections to what we've already done. Well, they can let us know at that time.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Is there anyone else on the line with us or present today who would like to make any presentation to the commission on these items?
One thing I would note is we did serve notice of this on both of S&S's attorneys. They have had notice of this.
Thank you.
Okay.
And giving them an opportunity to make any testimony at this time that they wish to make if they have joined us. Hearing none, the first question before the commission, and Mr. Smith, each one of the commissioners have received the information that you provided, the questions, and I'm sure we will be dealing with them.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, please.
If I may, I have a question for Mr. Smith.
Go right ahead.
Thank you. Did you personally speak to the S&S attorneys, or did you send them? You sent notice?
We sent them written notice.
And I think you probably would have mentioned it. I'm just curious. Did you get any comments back from them?
Nothing.
Okay, thank you.
That's
all.
No.
The first item, the first question is, shall a commission establish a procedure for providing notice to all potential claimants who have not yet filed of their rights and responsibilities in regard to filing claims against the proceeds? Is there a motion by members of the commission?
For discussion's sake, more than anything, Mr. Chairman, I would suggest that perhaps we give staff guidance to, mail to all 666 individuals we know about. Two, for those notices that are returned, we make a reasonable effort to track down an accurate address. And then third, that staff would issue a press release to newspapers that would help us get the word out.
I'll accept that as a motion that we should proceed, and we should proceed by doing so with the suggested methods of contact from Commissioner Johnson. Is there a second?
I second.
And I will concur. Question number two, shall a commission establish a cutoff date by which all potential claimants to the proceeds shall have filed their claims or be foreclosed from so filing? Is there any discussion or is there a motion by the commission?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think it is appropriate to establish a cutoff date, and we've certainly discussed among the commissioners different ideas, but I would be comfortable making the motion that we establish a 45-day cutoff date for filing of bond claim forms.
I will second that motion.
I'll concur.
Motion carries. Question number three, shall the commission determine that formal docketed complaints filed with commission by customers against S&S also constitute claims against the proceeds? Any questions or discussion on that item?
Mr. Chairman, I think staff recommendation is a good way to try to avoid unnecessary bureaucracy or hassle for those people that have already filled out some paperwork with the commission. As a result, I would move that the complaints should be considered as claims.
And I will second that. I also think that makes good sense, and I've spoken to a number of these customers, and we heard from them in the hearing, and I think the certainly from their perspective, they feel that they've made it known that they were wronged and would like the opportunity to receive whatever consideration we can get for them.
Absolutely. These folks have gone through quite a bit, and if we can make it a little bit easier on them, that would be great. I will concur, and the motion carries. Item number four, shall a commission order any other preliminary relief at this time? Are there any other suggestions or knowledge of what we should. I'm not aware of any other preliminary relief that we can provide. Mr. Smith?
Just on an informational note, it's as of this time, we haven't filed it yet, but staff is intending to file and will be filing soon a motion to consolidate in the complaint proceedings. We have 145 of them. I'm not going to talk about the substance of the motion, but just giving you a heads up that we're going to try to do that so we can bring this whole process into a way where we can just deal with it in a practical, sensible manner.
Thank you. We'll appreciate that.
And Mr. Chairman, I think especially since this is being heard over the Internet or will be archived on the Internet, it may be worth noting right now, Mr. Smith, we're talking about about $150,000 in proceeds that the Commission's received.
As of now, we have $150,000, and we have made a $125,000 filing. We actually made a slightly larger filing, but as of now, it's the plan in the Aberdeen Finance Corporation bankruptcy case includes approval of an additional $125,000. The unfortunate thing is that'll be payable over 11 years. So we'll be at this for a while. Additionally, there is another $125,000 in bonds out there that we have not yet received and that are being contested. And it's our intention that we will probably be coming before the, unless we can work a deal with these guys, we'll be coming before the commission fairly soon to obtain authorization to initiate legal action against Allied Insurance to try to obtain collection on those as well.
Thank you.
The following announcements, the next regularly scheduled commission meeting will be April 12. We will also have commission meetings on April 26th and May 10th. There will be a hearing on docket EL04-016 on Monday, March 21st, beginning at 10 a.m. That is scheduled through noon on Friday, March 25th, 2005. We have an energy forum that will be coming up in Sioux Falls at the Sheraton and Convention Center on April 18, 19, and 20. Are there any further announcements to be made at this time? If not, is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
Motion carries. We stand adjourned.
Thanks for coming.